thousands continue to die as Emperor Trump looks to reopen the US economy and seems to be more concerned with busily finding himself a scapegoat for his administration's slow response. Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider now living in Sydney, Australia. My name is Sean Britton from the radio station 2SCR. Please excuse my extremely strained vocal cords this week. I promise you I am not actually sick. You can find us every week wherever good podcasts are found, usually sounding a little bit clearer than this, as well as on Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed. Who needs them? Donald Trump is following through on threats this week to defund the World Health Organization in the middle of a global pandemic because of their mismanagement of COVID-19 and apparent allegiance to China. Thoughts, Ed?
Well, is this the latest scapegoat? When's Fauci going to go? He can't find enough scapegoats. He never looks at himself. At least the governor of New York has said, hey, if you want a fall guy, look at me. I should have acted sooner. Governor of California, similarly, I should have followed the signs sooner. This man has no capacity to accept anything himself. The World Health Organization will survive this. I'm sure somebody will give them a big donation, some other nation, or one of the big philanthropists to keep them going. Bill Gates, I think, is the second largest donor to the World Health Organization, and he could step up for a billion or two, and so would Amazon and others to show just how small this man is. But the timing's so bad. The World Health Organization is sounding the alarm, getting out the message of what should and should not be done, acting as a backstop for the world. He's a victim of his own usual bad timing.
Say, with Dr. Anthony Fauci, Trump now claims he's not thinking of firing the health expert. But Ed, I mean, we don't have to look too far to figure out who, apart from who, is going to be Trump's scapegoat for all this once I think the dust settles.
Well, Fauci's done something very smart. He's gone on his own to the Trump television stations. He's appeared on all the CNN networks. He's appeared on NBC, Nightly News, etc. So he's made himself a bigger image than Trump in all this disaster and is now looked to as the go-to person. So if he fires him, he knows he'll come down himself.
Look, again, this comes back to something we were talking about a few weeks ago before the pandemic really hit. It's all well and good to have Emperor Trump playing the clown when the economy is up, everything is business as normal. But whether he has total power or not, thousands and thousands and thousands of people are dying and may continue to die unnecessarily because of the decisions he alone is making. I mean, contrary to advice, Trump, in his total power and wisdom, has declared the pandemic to have peaked and some states will reopen before May 1st.
That's his silliness. And if a state follows that advice and more people die, I hope that governor knows what he or she is doing. It's true that the United States is so big, it's like a bunch of nations. You could open up parts of it at a time. But I think another 30 days would be the time to start considering that, not now. And many people, unfortunately, are already unemployed, underemployed, seeking shelter. They're not going to be benefited at all by this reopening because no business, in its right sense, is going to take this as a time to reopen fully unless they're absolutely bonkers or they're making supplies for COVID-19.
Where are different states at the moment in terms of handling the response?
Well, all 50 states are now in. This is a very recent development. And some of the looser states like Florida are tightening up things at the local level, closing beaches, closing parks. Texas, the state closed its entire park network. I don't think the governor ordered it. I think the State Park Department ordered it. So I think locals are taking over now, knowing and seeing firsthand how dangerous this virus is. So they're doing a good job. I wouldn't call it a great job, but hats off to them. I know this is a strain, and I don't think a lot of local people are going to want to hold public office after this. It's really a strain on you because you got to take away the very thing people want from you, their parks, their walking paths, and their little shops. This is tough on local government and local business.
Again, on looking for somebody to blame, a report claiming China's early handling of the disease and failure to adequately report to WHO breached Article 6 and 7 of the International Health Regulations has gained some notice over the past couple of weeks, and it says that China should be sued for $6.5 trillion for coronavirus damages. Just any thoughts on this one?
I think that's right. China wanted to hide the fact that they were experimenting with this bat flu, and somehow it got away from them. And they've got to accept responsibility for that. And that means reparations. I mean, really strong reparations. Those reparations might go entirely to the World Health Organization. But China is now the bad guy in the world. And I suspect it'll be a long time before China can repair its reputation. Money won't do it anymore. People are very suspicious of China. Now, on the good side of this, a lot of factories are going to be moving back to their homelands, because they can't stand these extended pipelines for goods and services that they get from China. The Chinese are so arrogant now, they're deciding who they're going to send supplies to, ratcheting up prices and telling people all over the world to go to hell. So I think that China is the culprit. China should pay reparations. And I think China should pay for a long, long time to the damages they've done to the rest of the world economy. But while they're paying for that, it's going to be painful for the rest of us, because they really have us in a lock hole when it comes to most goods. But I suspect, and this is just me, when somebody says see something with China written on it, they're going to throw it back in the very near future.
And this is all looking a bit biblical. Tornadoes and severe weather have struck southern states, killing at least 24 people and damaging hundreds of homes. In recovery, how do they go about it in the midst of COVID-19?
Well, this is a terrible thing to lose your home and to lose parts of your economy. But think of this as after the Second World War, when Germany lost its entire economy. It had to start fresh and built a stronger, more resilient economy, as we can see now from that. I hate to see this, but we're seeing it here in Australia as well. After the fires, we can't rebuild as we have. And I heard the commissioner who stepped down of the Rural Fire Brigade saying that we have to look what damage we're doing to the environment. We have to look at climate change. That's the first time I've heard that from a top official in Australia ever. I think we have to look at how our societies are organized to make them more resilient, to make them stronger. But maybe Mother Nature is telling us, get off my back.
OPEC and Russia, along with the United States, reached a deal over Easter to stop these sorties flooding the world market with excess oil. At the moment, you can see, if you leave the house, we're seeing very ridiculously low fuel prices. Now, the cut of 10% on production is the most dramatic ever seen, but may not be enough to save energy jobs in the US as the market hits a downturn. What's going on, Ed?
Well, again, the good news and bad news. On the good side of this, it's pretty obvious that people aren't driving as much. They're driving the shortest distances they can to pick up groceries, either from a food stand, if they have to basically beg for food and food supplements, or to a store and going back home because there's no job to go to. and there's no recreational driving going on because you can't even cross state lines here in Australia, and people are checking your license plate when you cross state lines in the United States. So I think travel is going to be down, especially air travel and sea travel, for the next decade. So oil prices are going to be very, very low.
On to elections 2020. Wisconsin, and in spite of holding an election in the middle of a pandemic and voter suppression like we talked about last week, a big, big loss for Republicans. Big turnout, big margins, bad news for Trump. Thoughts, Ed?
Well, you just said it all. You can fool the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. I said last week that the people of Wisconsin would send a message to the Republicans who made them hold this election, and they did. Even the Republicans turned against the Republicans for having done this. And you saw some of the signs in the street, "We're going to get you for doing this, endangering our lives," and they did. So I think this is a big change, a big move, not just a small move. And Joe Biden has to be a stronger candidate for people to believe he can carry it all. But Trump is not the preferred candidate in the small states, the big states, and in very few states.
Speaking of Joe Biden, Bernie has bit the bullet and endorsed Biden for leadership this week, and it's nice to see a familiar face again, Barack Obama, making his endorsement official. Now, look, I don't think anybody was anticipating anything different, so much impact on the race, Ed?
He came out a little bit earlier than I thought he would. I thought he'd save his powder until close to summer, when the conventions were going to be held to rally the troops and so on. But I think he sees this pandemic as meaning it's necessary to campaign online. And they'll be rearing up a very local online campaign. I've seen some of these things that I just happened to be on an online thing from Portland, Oregon, where a young lady's running for mayor almost entirely online. And it looks like she's going to win, because she's used social media so effectively. So I think we'll see both of the Obamas taking social media platforms to the United States and perhaps to the world, talking about a new United States bringing back hope.
Can Bernie persuade his diehard fans, though?
Yes. They persuade them to vote for Biden, most of them. Persuade all of them? No. But the other thing is, they're not going to vote for Trump.
And we wanted to talk some cabinet positions this week for a Biden fantasy football league. Firstly, Ed, somebody we haven't talked about, another familiar face you see as a potential VP.
Yes, Michelle Obama. I've got it right here on my screen. Michelle Obama is a plausible vice presidential candidate. She has clean hands, great wit, outstanding charm, and the only thing she did wrong was touch the queen. So there is a possibility, if you wanted a very strong candidate with Biden, one who will bring out the female vote, both black and white, Michelle Obama would be the person. She's the next most popular person after Oprah in the United States. So I think, and she's very popular in the suburbs, that she'd be a great candidate. But you don't have to put her there. What if Michelle Obama were to get a cabinet position? And there'd be a number of cabinet positions she could hold, but the best one would be the Department of Education. Mm. She is an educator. No one could turn her down for that job. And I think the United States would blossom under her in that role. But her husband is a pretty young guy. And him, as Secretary of State, would bring America back.
Mm.
Now, think of that threesome. Now, if he added Kamala Harris as Attorney General, we're singing, right? And maybe Buttigieg as housing and urban development, a mayor. And what about Castro is immigration and homeland security? A guy that, well, he doesn't speak a lot of Spanish, but he's got the right name. And then we have somebody like Romney for Secretary of Defense.
Bringing Romney into the fold.
And I'd get another Republican, and there's several out there, who could be Department of Interior and get things back on the track. Maybe even bring back the first Secretary of Interior. Well, she was governor of New Jersey and the first head of EPA. And she's a Republican. Bring her back as Secretary of Interior. So I'd start putting this cabinet together now. I wouldn't announce it now because all these people have some flaws. And you don't want to keep people like Klobuchar and people like that feeling they don't have a chance for the vice presidency. But I think she would be outstanding as the head of health, education, and welfare. All right, it's health and welfare, the biggest agency in the United States government. And after that, you've got the Department of Agriculture, where Beto O'Rourke, a guy from Texas, would be a shoe-in. So what kind of cabinet could Trump put up against that?
Ed and I will be back next week to talk the latest in U.S. news and politics. I promise I will be back. I am not actually sick. Remember to hit subscribe wherever you find the podcast and check us out on Facebook and Twitter at US of Ed.